Thank you so much for listening to this pre-recorded episode of Agent Chat Live. Agent Chat Live is a spinoff of Pub Talk Live. To find out more about both shows, go to pubtalk.live. Thank you so much to my Patreon podcast supporters, Brenda Drake, Jay Lynn, and Reframe.
Hello, everyone. See if anyone here. I saw some people were waiting earlier, so I know some people are here, but I always like to give it a couple seconds to kind of like start broadcasting. How's everyone doing? Okay, thank you for joining. Thank you for joining us on this Friday evening for Agent Chat Live. Hey, Laura. Good to see you. So today we have Linda Camacho from Galt and Zacher Literary. She moved over to agenting after holding various positions at Penguin Random House, Dorchester, Simon & Schuster, and Writer's House. Linda is looking for middle grade, YA, and adult fiction across all genres, especially upmarket, women's fiction romance, and literary horror. She also has an MFA in creative writing from the Vermont College of Fine Arts and a short story in the upcoming anthology Everybody Shines by my friend Cassandra Newbold. So please welcome to the show, Linda. Hello.
Hi.
So we have Laura here. So my regular show is called Pub Talk Live. And late last year, they started calling the community that was formed around it Pubbers. So if you see Pubbers, yeah, that's who it is. So.
Hello, Pubbers.
Hello, Lisa. I'm glad you could make it today. All right. So we're going to kind of start. So I told you this before, but I'll say it on video for everyone else. My goal here is to kind of help potential clients get to know you a little bit better. And so viewers are welcome to drop questions in the comments when it's time for that. But I do want to say kind of up front that we won't really be asking any questions that you can get from like a simple Google search or really kind of any agent can answer. So questions like genre definitions, word count. And I also won't be asking what I like to call pre-queries, which are like, would you be interested in, you know, mermaids in space, blah, blah, blah. So if you want to ask any questions, feel free to ask questions, but we do try to focus on kind of getting to know the agent versus like giving advice. So with all that being said, we're going to start off with a softball. And it is what categories and genres do you represent? I read some of them in your bio, but if you want to kind of expand a little bit.
Sure. I kind of represent a little bit of everything. I think it's just because I read, across the board. I'm not looking for as many picture books these days. I definitely have clients, for instance, who, write picture books. I tend to represent the writers and illustrators, the ones who do the the twofers. But I'm looking for fewer of that. So I think I have maybe only one person who does straight picture book text. But for the most part, it's just middle grade, young adult. I do a lot of graphic novels, across the board, YA and middle grade as well in that. I'm looking for early readers as well, like the younger, Dave Pilkey-esque or even Narwhal and Jelly, which my colleague Marietta Zacher represents. And I'm especially building my adult list these days because I think my list is mostly going to always be on the children's side, but I really do have a soft spot for horror, some adult horror and a good romance, rom-com, women's fiction. And so I'm kind of across the board in general. And I don't like to say, never to certain things because you just never know. So it's kind of like, if you're not sure, unless I'm saying I'm not taking XYZ, but if you're not sure, I'm probably the person to try.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Wide range then. So you're probably good also then for people who write in a couple different categories or genres as well.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's helpful in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So why, and I guess also how you've worked for publishing, but so why and how did you get into agenting? Why did you decide to make that?
Oh gosh, that's a long question. Okay. All right. Get ready. Get cozy. All right. So I'm sorry if you've heard this story before on any podcast, but it's definitely a doozy. So I'll try not to keep it too long. So my journey was kind of easy and hard. So there are two parts to that. So I graduated from college in 2005. And I think, like most people, not really being sure what they wanted to do. Of course, I knew I liked to read, but it was actually somebody who said, "Hey, Linda, you talk a lot about books, maybe way too much. Why don't you try publishing?" And I was like, okay, maybe. And she happened to be one of my college alumni people. She was also a person of color. And she said, "I happened to be on this panel with another person of color who was doing recruitment," because she was an HR person for Morgan Stanley. So she did a lot of diversity recruitment, but she was sitting next to someone who worked for Penguin and they were looking for people. And I was like, all right, maybe, yeah, I'll reach out and see what happens. And like most people, when they think of publishing, they think of, you know, being an editor. So yeah. Of course, that's the thing I applied for, editorial assistant position. And then of course, you know, I went in, or I was going to go in for an interview at Penguin. You know, the person who, her name was Francine, was super gracious. But then she called me the next day. She's like, "I'm so sorry. The position was taken internally." And again, that happens very frequently. Yeah. She said, "But we have this other position. It's called reprint production. Would you be interested?" And I was like, "I don't know what that is, but I am in." So I went in for the interview, and it was kind of really, I can't stress how easy it was. I don't think that'll ever happen in my lifetime. And these are kind of like the stories that I hate to hear usually. I'm like, damn, oh, is that easy? But I went in, and I'm a Puerto Rican from the Bronx, actually. And I went for an interview for reprint production. It was like all the backlist titles. Mm-hmm. So anything that has gone through frontlist, and once it goes in that second printing, we deal with that stuff. And it was for East Jove, Berkeley, Riverhead imprints. And so the supervisor, she was also a Puerto Rican from the Bronx, and we just kind of bonded. And I had memorized at the time, like all of the imprints. I had done my homework and we just bonded. And I basically, you know, was offered it on the spot. You know, on the way home, I got my, you know, the phone call, "You got the job." And I think it was for $19,000. I was like, yes, I'm going in. So I did that job for about a year. It was definitely a learning experience, but it was one of those things where I was like, okay, I think I need something a bit more creative. Cause again, reprints, especially on the adult side, unless you're doing like gift sort of books that are like really cool and quirky, not a ton of originality, at least from my perspective. So, and my boss at the time was kind of bored with her job. So she's like, "Linda, you know," and she was like 27. She felt very old and aged and worldly. And she's like, "You know, I always wanted to go to law school. You're so young. Why don't you go to law school?" You know, because obviously she was a hag who just couldn't, you know, do anything else with her life by then. And she was like, "Go to law school." I'm like, "I don't know, maybe." I'd be like, "Law school sounds cool." Most people I knew were jumping in because they had no idea what they wanted to do. But I remember shelving books. I was shelving books because we had so many in backlist. And then a book fell on my head. And it was How to Get into Law School. I'm like, oh my God, I think I should go to law school.
Was it your manager like on the other side of the shelf, like throwing the book at you though?
That's I wonder about that now. That'd be interesting. But yeah, so I wound up, you know, leaving my job and my poor parents. Thankfully, I was living with my parents at the time. So that made it easy. And they're like, okay, sure. We want you to be a lawyer. That'd be cool. I remember paying like $1,400 for a Princeton Review course and then, you know, taking the test a couple times, studying at least a good year and did very average, very average. So I remember doing like, you know, little side jobs and things, but unlike publishing, there were no books on the shelves. You know, we had those things called take shelves. You can just take books, you know, as you wish, because there were so many. And I was like, man, like how do people work in places where there are no books? So I realized, you know, I do want to get back into publishing. I was like, it's going to be easy. You know, I did it before. And that was about 2008. No, I did not get a job right away. So I actually had to go backwards. And I'm not even kidding. I truly had to beg my way into internships. Because even then I had worked a year in publishing. They were like, but you're too experienced. But I wasn't experienced. It was that weird sort of position to be in. So I begged my way into an internship. I harassed people like crazy. So I got into an internship at Dorchester Publishing. And there was a small press. They don't exist anymore, unfortunately, but they did like horror and they did romance. And I finally got to see the front end of publishing for the first time. So I was like, oh, this is great. And then still applying for jobs, talking to a lot of people, still not, you know, not getting lucky at all. And so I took another internship and then another and another. So I wound up falling into children's, and that, you know, there was a children's position that opened up. It was at Random House. I was like, oh, maybe I can try that. So it was an editorial assistant position at Random House Children's. And then I did one at Simon & Schuster, because still no job, Simon & Schuster Children's for Simon Pulse and Aladdin, but I did marketing. So I just kind of took whatever they would give me. Mm-hmm. And I accidentally like went to every department. So I did that. And then again, still no jobs. So eventually I found out there was like an internship at Writer's House Literary Agency. And the reason I found out was because I'd gone to interview so many times. I became really fast friends with the person I thought was the receptionist, but he was the internship coordinator. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, hey, like I would want to do this internship. And that's kind of, I did like a foreign rights for them. And eventually after harassing many, many people, I got a job at Random House Children's Books. So finally, and I was doing marketing for them and dealing with all the children's books from picture books all the way middle grade YA and kind of the gamut of that. But I knew then I enjoyed that more, but I still want to do something a bit more creative with talent. You know, and like most people in publishing, I'm sure there's some people who don't read in publishing, but for the most part, everyone I knew was super into books. So they liked that I would give feedback and stuff like that. I was trying to kind of wiggle my way into like an editorial job, but by then I was about 27, 28. And they were like, Linda, because I would apply internally for the assistant position. Even after 5 years there, I would still apply. And I knew I would have to start all over, but they're like, Linda, you're kind of, they were nice about it, but they're like, kind of old, you know, for an assistant position. Mm-hmm. Obviously 27, 28 is not old, but they wanted, you know, they're used to getting the people right out of college. So I had done that internship again at Writer's House. I was like, you know what, maybe I should try that. I really enjoyed, you know, what I saw there. Maybe I should just shift gears. And then after harassing a lot of people there, eventually someone offered me a job. So It was somebody who used to work at Writer's House like years ago, and they had their own agency. It's called Prospect Agency, and they did children's. They're still around. They do children's and they do a lot of romance in particular. So I was there about 2 years and, you know, making a lot of friends. And eventually I became really good friends with Marietta Zacher of Galton Zacher Literary Agency. And I think I bugged her so much with so many questions, because I'm that kind of person, you know, in terms of mentorship. She's like, how about we just make this kind of official? So she eventually hired me on to Galton Zacher Literary Agency. So it was different in the sense of I didn't come up as an assistant, because even when I started Prospect, I was like, you know, I don't know, you know, I know the other stuff on publishing, but I didn't know contracts and know stuff like that. I was like, how do you take on a client? But they taught me the ropes. Galton Zacher's continued that mentorship. So I've been publishing like 15 years, you know, doing those random things, which actually have been really helpful to see all sides of, you know, kind of the table. But yeah, agenting have been about 6 years so far. So far so good, and still here, thankfully. So I'm glad. Yeah.
Cool.
Phew.
All right. That is quite a story.
Yeah. I didn't answer the why. I mean, I think I just got lucky. You know, I think it was one of those things where I found a position, you know, I found an industry that I really loved, and I always kind of knew I wanted to work with artists. And so What I love about agenting, as opposed to editorial, which I think agenting is I'm strong editorially, but I don't think I'd necessarily be the best editor. You know, it's a different level, and I like the flexibility. It's scary. Agenting can also be very scary, but I do like the flexibility of it. So I think it's just nice to work with people, and, you know, you almost feel like someone had told me this, they said they felt like they were a fairy godmother, you know, that they kind of make people's dreams come true. And I love that part of it.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So this next question has a caveat. And it's because whenever I ask this question, people are too humble. So the caveat is, don't be humble. I'm specifically trying to give you a chance to brag about yourself. So take advantage of it. I know. People in publishing have so much trouble with this. All right. So if someone is thinking about querying you and your wish list lines up with their work, why should someone query you? Why would you make a good agent for them?
Oh, man. You know, I always think that kind of thing usually comes up in the conversation, you know, whenever you're, you know, whenever I call somebody, even when I'm excited about their work, I mean, unless I don't think I've ever done this. I don't think I've ever just gone, you know, I want to represent you. We have a conversation to see if it works. And I find in terms of my personality, you know, I'm very, you know, enthusiastic. I'm still very hungry, still building my list, you know, knowledgeable in seeing all aspects of publishing. And again, that was purely an accident. But, you know, even with simple things that my clients will ask, like, oh, why is this showing up funny on Amazon? You know, I used to have to deal with the Amazon Onyx feeds and all that stuff back in the day. So it just helps to give them the full picture so that there's no freak out, even things like that. I find that I'm very calm as well. So I'm pretty good at keeping people calm and even keeled, especially because, you know, it's a very stressful industry. I think it's full of so many highs and so many lows that it helps to work with someone who's very even keeled. And also, I'm definitely not the person, you know, I'm always going to be the person to be in your corner and encourage. And, you know, at least half of my clients have been publishing in things that they were afraid to try initially, you know, something that they expressed interest in, but they just thought they couldn't do it. But I encourage them to try it. You never know. But at the same time, I never make false promises. I'm always, you know, very upfront. You know, I'm never going to be the one to call you and say, you know, if I'm offering representation, I'm not going to say, I'm going to get you $1 million. I mean, I would love to, and you better believe I'm going to try it, but I'm a straight shooter. So at the same time, if you like someone who's very upfront and honest, you know, I'm your gal.
Awesome. And, one of your clients was recently selected for Reese Witherspoon's book club too, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Shamila Mendez. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And that was, you know, it's kind of funny too. Like that was a gift that we, at the time when she was selected, you know, nobody knew about this. It wasn't a thing that people could even think, oh man, I wish I could be on the YA Witherspoon, you know, Reese Witherspoon book club. But it's definitely a gift, I will say. And, you know, she's worked so hard. And she's been with me actually from, oh, bless her, my first year of agenting. Oh, wow. She took a risk on me because I know that, you know, it's hard. You know, she had offers even before. And I think I was a couple months into agenting. And we just connected and she took a massive risk. And we're still together and it's worked out beautifully. But we've come up together and it's a really wonderful partnership. And to see things like that happen, to people that you feel, man, like they just really deserve it. It's exciting.
And she just announced a new book deal too.
Yeah. So. She keeps me busy. She keeps me busy. Yeah. Nice. She's venturing. She's done, my goodness, she's done picture books, middle grade, and Foodia, the one that got on the book club was her first YA. I know she's another one that's coming up in a couple years that she's working on, but yeah, now she's moved into women's fiction romance, which she has kind of expressed, you know, it's something she wanted to do. So why not? Right.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. She was, I think our first like Pitch Wars mentee liaison, she was like, and that position didn't really exist. She would just kind of like, was like, oh, if you need help, you know, with the mentees. So,
She's very generous.
All right. So we have a question from one of my Patreon supporters. If you support on Patreon, $5 or more a month, you get to submit questions ahead of time for all my guests. If you want more information about that, I think it's in the description. It might not be, but if not, it's there, patreon.com/pubtalklive. And so Jalen actually has a couple questions for you. And the first one is, what are your favorite tropes in stories and which ones do you think need to be retired?
You know, what's interesting when I was, and again, never say never, cause I'm sure somebody's going to do something amazing with that for a long time, especially if you're thinking of like romance, I used to love the best friend to lover. And now I've gone in the opposite direction where I'm like, that's kind of boring. And again, you're going to prove me wrong. But for me, I'm like, I think I can take a break from that one. And I do love, and again, this goes across the board. It doesn't even have to be for romance. I do love the enemies to lovers or enemies to friends. I think there's something funny in that, you know, getting to know a person where you might've just had this misapprehension about them and then turning it into some sort of friendship. I think that's really special. Yeah. Because I feel like every really good story is a love story, even if it's not a romance in the, you know, in a typical sense, you know, you have friendship, you have family, and all of those dynamics are just so fun to watch. Even in a quote unquote more quiet book, that's not super, you know, high genre, high concept. But if you get those people right and something like that, especially with enemies to friends, enemies to lovers, I think you're golden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, enemies to friends can be so sweet, especially I love it in genre fiction, especially like science fiction, fantasy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was watching that show. Was it Never Have I Ever?
I haven't seen it.
Yeah. And it was, you know, they were rivals. In this case, it wound up being kind of a romance, but they were academic rivals. And what I liked about it too was that he wasn't a jerk. You know what I mean? Like he was, because it's a really hard balance to do it too, right? They have to be redeemable. Mm-hmm. It can't be something that they've done in the past that they can't come back from.
Yeah.
But I thought it worked. And at least in that show, worked for me.
Awesome. I also love fake relationship. That's one of my favorites.
Oh, those are fun too. Those are fun. Yes. Yeah.
All right. So another question from Jaylen. Your bio says you have an MFA in creative writing. Do you think a master's degree is worth it for a writing career? She says, I really want one, but haven't justified the cost to myself.
You know, it's a luxury degree. Let's be honest. I was able to afford it. And at the time I was working at Random House. So they also helped. They chipped in a little bit, not all the way, but they helped. And that was nice. But yeah, it's expensive. And it's something that I loved my experience there and I wouldn't give it up. And I learned so much. And actually my first book sale came from Vermont College of Fine Arts. She was one of my classmates. Mm-hmm. And Shamila is actually a VCFA grad that I didn't know her at the time, but she came up. And so for me is the gift that keeps on giving. However, and I talked to people who were interested in going to the Vermont College of Fine Arts, you know, they'll wrap them to me. I'm never going to be the hard sell where I'm like, you know, to publish, you must have an MFA. That's just nonsense. I think it's great in terms of, yeah, you're going to learn a lot about craft. You can focus on that. I think it can speed up your journey if you feel that you're building craft, but if you can't afford it, that's okay. I don't think you should break the bank for it. I really don't. Like, don't put yourself into an obscene amount of debt, because just do it the old fashioned way, you know, read, read, read. I also love, and it almost sounds silly, but I love watching movies. I have watched, I'm such a big Netflix watcher, you know, HBO, all the things, because that also gives me, you know, ideas for plot structure issues. Like I remember I was watching something, I'm like, oh, that was the issue in my clients. I was like, I couldn't put my finger on it, but that's the issue. Mm-hmm. So use mentor texts, you know, read within your genre. I also say read outside of it too. There's so many things you can learn. So no, you can't afford it. That's okay. Don't go nuts.
Yeah. One thing that I've been enjoying lately, and because you were mentioning things you can do instead of MFA, is some of the master classes on writing are really good.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I feel like I've been going to conferences and writing workshops since, let's see, when 2010. I think is when I started. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of them, I feel like, oh, I've heard everything. I've heard this. But some of the master classes are really interesting. The Margaret Atwood one was pretty good. And I started watching the Brad Meltzer one.
Yeah, I feel like there's so much stuff out there. Like I've never watched those, but they sound really great. And I think it is a lot of trial and error, right? Because you have... you know, sometimes I'll notice, and it's like there's certain teachers who are amazing and some that like they're okay. And it's just finding that right fit for you and what you need at the time. Because I notice there's some classes that are more, I'm more of the hardcore, like I want to know all the craft stuff. Mm-hmm. And then there are some courses that are more building up your confidence, which you do need as well. So I think you can find that nice balance of, okay, this person's going to push you to write, you can do it. But you also have those hard and fast craft rules that you can learn and break them and do your own thing as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. So final question from Jay. What gets you most excited about a manuscript, both kind of at the query stage and at the full stage before you make an offer?
At the query stage, I would say usually it starts with concept, right? So of course, you know, especially like, man, oh my gosh, I'm excited about, you know, you said mermaids in space. This sounds amazing. And then I'll read a few pages. And people ask this all the time. And I will say, I wish there were like one answer where it's like, if you do this, I'm on board. I wish I knew that answer even for editors, because then I would never get any, you know, rejections from my clients. But it is subjective. It is such that, you know, I'm looking at the pages, I'm looking for something that speaks to me, right? And it, there's no answer as to what that is. You know, you could be reading a New York Times bestselling book and you might be going, how did this get published? You know, or you're reading this book that nobody ever paid attention to and you're like, this is brilliant. Why isn't anybody talking about it? So it's just, publishing is incredibly subjective. But I will say, I'm just looking for that something special. I don't know what it is, because I will say too, whenever I pass on queries, I pass on a lot of them. And honestly, most of the time, it's not because the writing's bad. Most of the time, it's actually really good. You know, that's why I want to tell people, it's not me passing on your query or your pages doesn't mean you're a terrible writer, you should stop. Not at all. It's just, it didn't speak to me personally. So I think it's just a matter of finding that right fit, you know, for someone who's going to get excited about it. I've definitely passed on stuff too that I knew was going to sell, but I just knew I wasn't the right person to champion it. Or even something that I really loved, but I wasn't sure. I was like, I don't know exactly what to do with, you know, it, like there's so many levels. So yeah, I just look for something that kind of sings to me personally. And then, you know, you offer a representation and you hope for the best, you know, and then I cry, you know, you cry, you're like, no, I didn't get it. And, but you still root for it to succeed. You know, that's the beauty of it.
Awesome. All right. So we're going to, it's almost like what's like an interlude. we're going to break up the pace a little bit. This is the quick answer round.
Oh no. I feel terrible at those. Okay.
So I have five questions here and just like the first answer that comes to your mind, basically. All right. So for anyone who hasn't seen the show before, when I was kind of coming up with the concept of the show, I knew I wanted to be like a casual, friendly chat with literary agents. And I'm terrible at coming up with titles. And so I asked my Patreon supporters, if they had any suggestions for the title. And one of them, came up with, Snack Time with an Agent. And which I really liked, and I thought like was cute, and it like fit the atmosphere I was going with. But I also thought it was and implied that it was for kidlit only, so I decided not to do it. But this question came from that. This is a quick round. Not all the questions you're gonna have long leaders like that, but this one does. So here we go. All right. What is your favorite snack?
Okay. Recently, I've been eating a lot of chocolate chip cookies. I've been in a chocolate chip cookie mood. Yes.
Nice.
That's been the main snack. Yep.
All right. What is your preferred caffeine source?
I would say I rarely drink coffee, but when I do, I really like it. So it's complicated. It should be faster than this, but okay. I'm going to go with, I really like Starbucks's caramel frappuccino because it like resembles the coffee of my dreams, because any coffee that I have, I'll put so much milk and sugar, it's not coffee anymore. So I'll go with that.
All right. Is there a word that you irrationally hate?
No. Okay. No. Now it's going to come to me in the middle of the night, but no, I don't think so.
You're going to just like tweet at me if it happens.
Okay. I'm serious. I'm going to have to think about that, but no, not off the top of my head.
There are some people who have really strong feelings, and then there are other people who are like, no,
not really. Like I used to be that person where it was I stopped being that person because I realized that person was really annoying, you know, where they correct grammar or they correct, you know, word usage, but we're, you know, language is ever evolving. So yeah. That's what it is. No, I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah. I always try to say English is a living language.
Mm-hmm. It is.
All right. Is there any person that you want to read a memoir from?
I would say my grandmother, because she tells me, okay. So I know she's very stern. She's a stern Puerto Rican lady. But I know she lived a wild life because sometimes her story changes when she's telling it. So I want to know what really happened there, Grandma. What were you doing back in the day? So I know she's doing stuff that, you know, she's like, no, I never. She did. I just need to know what she did.
That's great. All right, final quick round question. What's your, or who is your favorite superhero?
Okay, so initially, I'm kind of torn between, okay, so it's changed. Initially it was Captain America, okay. But I love, because I, okay, what, oh my God, my brain. Chris Hemsworth, what's the dude he plays? Oh, Thor. Of course, Thor. Thor was super boring initially, but he made him so interesting that I become a Thor person, and especially Fat Thor. I like Fat Thor. Fat Thor is my favorite superhero.
I think a lot of people change their opinion on Thor based on on his performance. Yeah. Because he brought humor to it.
He did. Yeah. Initially, like, he's gorgeous and he's fun to watch. But, you know, Captain America is still, like, top, you know, up so close to him. But the way he just, I think they allowed him to be more Chris Hemsworthy, maybe, or something. Yeah. He just humanized him much more that I'm like, oh man, I didn't expect to like Thor that much. And I really do.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. All right, so that's all the fun. We have a serious question now. That's not true. It's always fun, even when it's serious. All right. So again, this question has a caveat too, because a lot of times when I hear this question asked, it's like, if you had a magic wand, what would you change about the industry? Right? Like, what would you do with the industry? And I mean, that's fine, but also kind of. I'm a very pragmatic person, right? So, like, taking a more pragmatic approach to it, if you were, say, you know, the CEO of Penguin Random House or whatever, and what would you do within reasonable limits to kind of improve the book publishing industry?
Ooh, I would say, and again, watch them be like, Linda, that's not possible, but how can we make it such that, and they're sort of starting to do this, make it more of a living wage. Can we start there? Like, I think that's key. Cause look, I struggled. I remember my journey was twofold. I eventually did struggle, but I was living with my parents. I grew up in New York. No, I'm not wealthy, but anybody who struggles financially or like, how are you going to get into this industry unless you're working like that? I mean, I know some editors who are working multiple jobs and they have health insurance and they have benefits and all that sort of thing. So just making a living wage, especially in New York, you know, and if you can't do that, if you really are like, no, like that's just not going to work, then make it much more remote, because how do you force people to live in New York permanently? You know, I was talking to somebody about this the other day where it's like, okay, well maybe, you know, if they're saying, no, they need to be in New York, you know, you fly them in, you can have, almost like an internship situation where there is a period of time you need to spend in New York. And if you could help subsidize to a point, you know, again, the living wage situation. And if you have to reduce it later, let them go remote, you know, something with that. Because, I mean, even as an agent, it was only recently that I stopped working multiple jobs, you know, even for me. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, I had to leave Random House, of course, because you can't agent while you're at a publisher. That makes sense. But I worked at a restaurant. I was a reservationist. I worked at a children's hair salon. I worked, for really wealthy people doing weird things for them. Just make it livable, give people just a little bit more money. We're not asking for six figures here, but I am happy to see. I don't know if it was Macmillan. There are a few places that raised the initial salary to like, what, 40,000? That's a start. I just hope that, come on, keep it going, you know?
Yeah, we've been covering it on Pump Talk Live. It seems like every episode in the last couple episodes has been a publisher announcing they're raising their starting wage to somewhere between 40 and 45,000. And we were talking about on the last episode too, is like, that it seems like a good investment for me to pay your editors a wage where they don't have to work another job, because they're going to do their job better if they're not having to go and work a second job and they're, you know, they're tired and overworked and they've used all their brain power, you know?
Yeah, it's true. Because even with editorial, right, and similar to the agenting thing, it's like editors have to take work home all the time. And that's what caused a big problem when, you know, I think always technically they had to be paid overtime, but people didn't really do that. You know, yeah. People were always doing, and I know that's not exclusive to publishing, especially with editorial. Yeah. You know, all the work that they would do, I remember even for me in some cases, you know, they would say, I remember, and this was 15 years ago, but even in my job where we were really slammed with work, and I was like, hey, I have to put my hours down. They're like, no, just don't do overtime. But it was impossible. So what they were just saying is don't report it, basically.
Yeah.
And now that they have to, they're still figuring out how do they work around it. But I know people aren't really reporting the amount of work they do. So then you have editors who are bringing home work and then doing extra work, like outside work, like retail or something to pay the bills. It's like three jobs at least. Mm-hmm. And it's terrible. Yeah.
Yeah. Lauren has the same thought I do. Tell me more about the weird thing.
Oh, that's like a whole other episode.
I was going to say, that's a different...
Like where I'm like, this is a whole other world.
That's a different show entirely, yeah. Reb has a good question. How do you handle situation where an author disagrees with some revisions? Would it be a deal breaker for working with that author?
Yeah, no, not at all. You know, I think, so I guess even at the stage where I'm offering representation, I always tell people, you know, you don't have to agree with everything that I'm saying, as long as we're getting the gist of it. So for instance, if I, you know, if I make a suggestion, you're like, eh, that's not the way, that's fine. Like it usually just means, okay, something's off here, and however you want to, you know, amend it or make something work, is fine. Because again, I'm not the writer, this is your story, right? And there might be a thing there, you're like, no, this is important to the story. I'm like, oh yeah, then you have to keep that. But it's a different scenario if I'm saying change all of the things that make your story, you know, your story, right? Mm-hmm. If it's something, like let's say there was one revision note or couple that you're like, oh no, maybe that doesn't work, but we could work around it. But if I'm literally telling you, I don't know, something extreme like this, an editor once did this to somebody. Well, I don't know if I'll say that. Let's just say if I said something like, you know, there are these queer characters and maybe we should make them friends. That clearly I don't get what your story is about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something like that. If it's like a colossal major thematic thing that I'm saying, change the whole, you know, just gut your story and mm-hmm. make it something that's not your store anymore, you know, then maybe we're not the right fit. And I will say, look, I have worked with someone, several people, one in particular that we literally had to gut her book, but it was to get it into the shape, into the vision she was trying to go for. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, it's one thing if we're like, okay, we're going to tear it apart, but it's making it more her vision as yeah. opposed to making it Linda's vision, which you might not agree with.
Yeah. So
it's a balance, you know, but it's okay. I'm not going to agree with everything. They don't agree with everything, but it is a nice collaboration.
All right. Let's see. We have probably time for one more question. We're going to do two more questions, actually. So can you tell us about the last couple of books that you read that you really enjoyed?
Oh, man. Okay. I read, oh, my gosh, there was a book that I was reading, and I forgot the name. Abby Jimenez wrote it, and it was a very steamy read. I'm gonna look at my phone.
I was gonna say, I'll Google it real quick.
It was her first book. It has like a blue cover on it. And she just, I'm looking it up right now. She has just such a sense of humor that I find it's tricky to find. And again, I adore romance.
The Friend Zone?
That was the blue one, right? I was gonna say it was The Friend Zone. I really liked that one. I thought she had such a sense of humor. And it kind of tackled something unusual. You know, the main character was challenged and, you know, with having children. And that was kind of a part of the story that hindered her, you know, and her potential partner, because she kind of hid it from him and she knew that he really wanted kids and all that sort of thing. So, but she managed to do it in, you know, a very heartfelt, sincere way, but also was really just funny. Like she made such a situation so funny. So yeah, I find it really hard to find really funny romance, unless it's like a Katie McAllister book or obviously now Abby Jimenez. So I'm looking for more quirky romance. And it wasn't even necessarily a rom-com. It was a straight contemporary, and it worked really well. Another one that I read, and it was so good, Kiss Number 8. It is a graphic novel, and it is young adult. It's fantastic. You have to read it. It's so good. It's basically about this girl who is figuring out her sexuality within her family. And it's really hard to watch, you know, because there are family secrets that kind of come into play, which also affect that as well. She's really close to her father, who struggles because his parent also, you know, had kind of issues with their sexuality as well. Mm-hmm. So it kind of filtered down to her. But it has such a beautiful ending that you just like, you know, you have kind of happy tears at the end. So I will say it's nice to have that LGBTQ beautiful story. It was hard won in the story. She goes through a lot, unfortunately, but I will say that by the time you get to that end, you're just so happy for them. Yeah. Awesome. So Kiss Number 8, that was like so good. Yeah.
All right. We have a question from the comments. I'm going to bring it in. But that's the last question from the comments we're going to take. Just a heads up. Do you have a preferred POV? And also a follow-up, how do you feel about second person?
Ooh, you know, I don't usually like second person. However, sorry, I was like, I always tell people, publishing is every answer, it depends. Mm-hmm. I need Lego, I don't like second person. But then I read Lucy Christopher Stolen and then adored second person POV. And in that story, she, you know, is talking, the main character is a girl who was kidnapped. And then, so she's telling it from her point of view, but she is addressing her kidnapper after the fact. And it's like this letter that she's writing. And it worked perfectly. So again, I think that when it works, it works. I don't necessarily have. I mean, I really love first person, but I don't know if it's because I've been reading so much of it. You know, I read a lot of YA. But when I read more romance, you know, like, you know, before I got into YA years ago, most romance was third person and still is for the most part. It's shifted a little bit to some first person. I just think it depends on the genre. You know, I don't like to put rules on POV, but second, I think, is just hard to pull off. I think it's really tricky to do. But again, I mean, you could be the one who does it really well, like Lucy Christopher. So, yeah. So right now I'm in a very first person state of mind, but I also like a close third is my other second one.
Nice. Yeah, Keeping Your Secret, which was my FFYA romance, was in third person. And I got so frustrated with the pronouns. You couldn't tell who was who, like in some of the more romantic scenes, right? So you just have to like constantly use their names. So the one I'm writing now, I was like, I'm writing in first person just to make that easier.
Yeah, it does feel closer. It feels much more immediate when you're writing it too. Mm-hmm. Like I do feel, and I haven't really been writing in a, I procrastinate. I love talking about writing, so that's fun. But I will say when writing, I do prefer to write in first person. I think there's a good feel to it. But I think it's just because it feels more immediate or something, you know?
All right. Tamara joined us late. Hey, Tamara. She's in Australia, so she has an excuse. And I said I wasn't going to take any more questions from the comments, but she's asked this in the last two, and I really like the answers, so I'm going to go ahead and ask it. Okay. And then we're going to say goodbye. So what published author would you love to work with, even if they have an agent, even if the agent is your friend, like anyone?
Oof. A dream. Let me see. Oh, man. Okay. I recently read, I also forgot to mention, I recently read Uprooted by Naomi Novik. So I'm going to have to go with her because she's like the one I'm in love with at the moment. So maybe I'll say Naomi Novik. Yeah.
I haven't read Uprooted yet.
Working with her.
Yeah. I read Spinning Silver and I loved it.
That's the next one I'm going to be reading. It's so good. And I haven't read an adult fantasy in such a long time that it was just such a breath of fresh air. Yeah. So good.
All right. Well, Linda, thank you so much for joining me today and chatting with me. I had so much fun.
Same.
And you can find Linda's Twitter and also the website Forgotten Zacher in the description right now. If you're watching the replay, thank you for watching the replay. It will be there. And also if you're listening on the podcast, it will also be in the podcast description as well. Thank you, everyone. Stay safe, wash your hands, wear a mask, and we'll see you next time.